shoot, they score!
Score!
We have put the clock in!
Put the shot, they score!
This week in the NHL.
I felt like I did all the right things to prepare for this game.
We got to be focused all 60 minutes.
This week in the NHL.
The most arrogant team he's ever played
against.
Do you
think that's more of a personnel issue or more of a
scheme
issue?
He's dominating like the Jets wanted him to do.
This is NHL This Week with the Illegal Curve. Now, Drew Mandel, Ezra Ginsberg, and Richard Pollock on your home of the Winnipeg Jets and all things hockey. TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Good evening, Winnipeg. Good evening, Manitoba. For all those joining us this evening at TSN1290.ca, good evening, universe. Welcome to a Tuesday edition of NHL This Week with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Joined by Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com. As I mentioned, 2 hours of hockey talk for you. This evening, we start with the Winnipeg Jets. The road trip is mercifully over as the Jets' winless streak has fallen to six games, or has increased to six games after last night's 3-2 defeat in St. Louis. I suppose if you're looking at the bright side, it wasn't a 7-0 loss. But if you're looking at the realistic side, you've gone on the road, you played four Central Division rivals, you come home with 0 points, which is somewhat hard to do in this day and age in the NHL where so many games are three-point games. I think that just goes to show you how uncompetitive the Winnipeg Jets were in many of the games on this road trip, gentlemen. Last night better, but certainly a long way to go to getting back to the Winnipeg Jets we had seen earlier this year. Both at MTS Center and on the road.
Yeah, they were competitive last night. They could have easily won that game, in my opinion, and they played down to the last second. But as you mentioned, Drew, this is a terrible slump for the Jets, and everybody knows that. I think this is, without question, the worst slump that they've had since Paul Maurice took over from Claude Noel a couple of years ago. And you know, watching that game against the St. Louis Blues, because the Jets have already lost the game to the Blues this year at MTS Center, you kind of got the feeling that, you know, that these guys were under almost too much pressure this early in the season. And what I mean by that is I thought they were forcing things, you know, whether it's Mark Scheifele, you know, late in that third period trying to do it all himself, trying to go around three Blues in their zone. You know, it's tough, though. I mean, anybody that has been watching this team over the last couple of weeks, guys, can tell you that they haven't been playing well enough defensively. And I thought, for the most part, they played pretty well defensively. Sure, on the David Backes' second goal, you know, was he in front of the net, left alone in front of the net? Jacob Trouba, if you remember, goes into the corner when Mark Stewart's already taking a defenseman there in the corner. So, you know, is that the issue for that game? No, because it was a one-goal game. I mean, I really believe that game could have gone either way, Drew. But looking at the road trip as a whole, and before the Jets went on the road trip, we were talking about it, the narrative being, is this going to be a defining road trip? And we all kind of agreed a couple of weekends ago that there are going to be many defining moments in a season, but this is certainly the defining moment early in the season.
Well, that's not good.
It's not. No, absolutely not. And it's
the
it's
voice
still
of sanity, Richard Pollock.
It's still early here, but you got the 20th game of the season tomorrow night against Vancouver at MTS Center, and you're almost a quarter of the way through the season, right? So you can't use that excuse too much. So at this point in the season, you just need points, and they needed 2 points yesterday. They didn't just need 1 point, and they ended up getting none. So again, it's a disheartening loss. But to me, it's how they're going to react here on this homestand, because if you don't get 3 wins on this homestand,
well, you're playing 3 teams at the end of road trips.
Right. And 3 teams that, even though 2 of them are ahead of you in the standings, you should win them, right?
You should win all of them.
So Vancouver and Colorado aren't exactly powerhouses. Pardon me, Vancouver and Arizona. Colorado's the one team that's behind them. You should beat these three teams just because of how you've played over the last 6 games. And, you know, watching the game yesterday, you know, I felt for these guys, you know, because there's obviously an element of the fan, us being in Winnipeg here. But, you could feel it that these guys are gripping their sticks tight. Like, they knew that that was a must-win game after that 7-0 loss to Nashville, because that 7-0 loss to Nashville was arguably the worst loss that they've faced ever since they came over from Atlanta.
I mean, that was the most embarrassing performance. The second period against Minnesota was probably the most embarrassing period.
And there were some bad games in that
right before Noel got fired. Yep. I mean, it was the third year, right?
Yeah, those back-to-back losses to Washington at home during the lockout year, those were pretty bad.
At least they were right in it.
But this one was particularly bad because they had lost four in a row. They'd lost to Minnesota and Dallas and Philly at home.
They lost six in a row, really.
Yep, they have.
Yeah, they're winless in their last six.
I mean, if you want to, that's a loss. They lost Ottawa. I mean, of course, it's a shootout, but they lost. That's six in a row.
Yeah. And six in a row when you're only, you've earned 1 point.
Yeah, five without a point.
Yeah, which is hard to do. And I mean, you know.
Well, you talk all you want about the four teams that they played being very good, and there are good teams, but Philadelphia isn't not any good.
No. And even though the Jets thought that they were competitive, the Jets expect to be competitive against in all those games.
Of course. I mean, again, every team is competitive in every game, mostly in this day and age. Of course, you have the Leafs and different teams, and they're competitive right now. But there's many things we want to talk about in this first hour about the Jets. But if you just want to get down to the math of it, and as you mentioned, the quarter mark of the season, I looked at the math today, and I'm thinking, okay, how did the Jets get to what they got to last year? Last year, they ended the season with 99 points. Remember, mm-hmm. they played Anaheim, was the top seed.
Right.
So 99 points was the bottom of getting in last year. The Jets have 63 games left. I know it's early to start doing this, but hey, let's bring it up.
Sure.
Jets have to go 37-20-6 to get 98 points. That's not even getting what they had last year. Assuming last year gets you in, and it's possible it's even higher this year based on the quality of the play of the Central. It depends. Obviously, they beat each other up. 37-20-6. I mean, that's a big... And I know you can't look at it. If you're in the room, for sure, you can't look at it in that way because it's too daunting.
Yeah. It's 11 games over 500. That's, you know, if you take the overtime defeats and you put them into the loss column, it's 11 games over 500 in the remainder of the year.
And the point Richie's trying to make is when you lose 4, 5, 6 games in a row, you put yourself in a big hole. And, you know, we don't want to be all doom and gloom and say that the Jets have no chance at making the playoffs. But the reality is they have to start winning with their next game tomorrow night versus Vancouver, and they have to continue it. And that's obvious. I mean, everybody knows that. In that room, everybody knows that they have to turn this around immediately. And they knew they had to turn it around against Nashville. They knew they had to turn it around against St. Louis, and they didn't get any points. So that just puts more pressure on you to get some points against Vancouver and Arizona.
Well, you guys both thought they were going to be real good on Saturday. Right? Like, you guys thought they were going to turn that on.
And I will say mea culpa for that right off the start. Because what I saw, I thought that there were positive signs. And here's why I'm skeptical now. I thought there were positive signs on Thursday. To your credit, Richard, you thought there were no positive signs loss against Dallas. I thought there were positive signs that was going to lead to a better performance on Saturday against Nashville because Nashville was a less dynamic hockey team.
Sure. And so when I agree that playing against a less dynamic team was probably to their benefit because of how poorly they're defending right now.
And when they came out on Saturday and they laid that 7-0 stink bomb, I was stunned. And then last night, they go and they lose. And sure, there's probably some better signs there. I think there's better. Would you agree that there were better signs last night than there were after the Thursday game in your
100%,
mind?
100%. That's the only game you can take anything from.
Right.
So maybe a little bit from Dallas. I wouldn't say too much.
So there's slightly better signs. But, I mean, I thought there were better signs after Thursday. So I'm not saying that this means that they're on their upward trajectory. Because when I said that on Saturday's show, they went out that night and lost 7-0. So I don't know what this team is all about right now. This team is fragile. Their confidence is fragile as can be. It's a Fabergé egg. And, you know, what happens if they give up an early goal tomorrow against a Vancouver team that's also struggling and that's also at the end of a long road trip? You know, do they have it within them to bounce back that quickly? I'm not sure if they do anymore right now.
You mentioned they're fragile, and I agree. And you have Brian Little and Dustin Byfuglien scoring 36 seconds apart, and then a minute and a half later, David Backes puts St. Louis ahead. I mean, that's the type of situation mm-hmm. where you got to tighten it up a little bit and mm-hmm. wait for your opportunities, right? So it's difficult for me to put my finger on why the slide has been this bad, because I think we'd all agree in every other show on the station and every other writer that covers the Jets can tell that the Winnipeg Jets have not been playing well defensively. That's a given. We don't have to, you know, beat a dead horse again with that, right? But the fact that they've played so poor defensively with essentially the same group of defensemen, the same two goaltenders, mm-hmm. with the exception of a few forwards, and it's a team kind of psyche right now that is really letting them down, I believe, because this is still the team that started off winning four of the first five games, five of the first seven games, right? Mm-hmm. It's a good team. I mean, I know, you know, we argued at the beginning of the season whether this is a playoff team or not, but we all agreed if they're not going to be a playoff team, they're going to be right in it. They're a competitive mm-hmm. team, and they have the playoffs last year behind them now, so they know that they can do it. They know that they can play with the Chicagos. They know they can play with the St. Louis's. And it's one of those things. Sometimes in hockey, you get into these slumps, right? Every team goes through them. Anaheim went through them. Ryan Getzlaf just scored his first goal of the season. It's game 17 or game 18. So, I mean, good players, good teams go through these, and they got to get themselves out of it. They got to eke out a win versus the Vancouver Canucks. If it's 1-0, 2-1, if a puck goes in off of your face to win it, doesn't matter. But yeah. You can't be giving up too many breakaways. You can't be giving up goals where missed assignments occur. It's crunch time. They have to win tomorrow night.
I guess if you're looking for, you know, positives out of last night, they didn't give up any breakaways that I can recall. So, you know, they may have shored up on the long stretch pass that they were getting burnt with over the last, you know, 3, 4, 5 games. So I suppose that's a small positive. And, you know, they resembled what they're supposed to look like, or what we expect them to look like last night. Whether or not that continues over to Wednesday in tomorrow's game against Vancouver is a separate issue altogether. But Richie, let me ask you: these moral victories and these—you know—these.
I'm not. I mean, again, they're better than they were the days before, and that's something built on. So I guess in that sense, it's a moral victory. But you're playing in the National Hockey League, right, and its points are at a premium. And I don't take much of moral victories. You got to win. I mean, there's no room in this league to lose 4 games in a row, get no points, and feel good about the way you ended. I mean, sure, Paul Maurice has to cling to anything right now to get his team going, but...
Are you hearing from any moral victories and chat, sort of that sort of opinion coming out of the dressing room, though? I mean, I think, you know, Ezzie and I are obviously talking about it, but I haven't heard a lot of the players say, you know, we're close to getting back to where we are. I haven't heard any of the, you know, the, we lost, but... Which I think is still a good sign in that they're not grasping at any straws, you know, they're not looking for excuses yet.
I don't know. I if you can't defend, it's hard to win. I mean, simplifying it. Forget what the players are saying and all that stuff. Most of it's just cliche stuff anyways. Next game, you know, Mark Scheifele, who's the king of the cliches, but he comes on Saturday. You know, we got to work at it on the Hockey Night Canada broadcast, and they come out and lose 7-0. So certainly not on him. It's the whole team. But the idea is that doesn't mean anything. You know, how you play means something. And, you know, and I have to say, it's not, you know, sometimes when you have struggles like this, it's your leaders are letting you down. And to a point, they are. But, I mean, Little and Wheeler last night were the best two forwards for the Jets. Little's been great lately. Mm-hmm. And Wheeler's certainly been getting points and been busting his butt. It's the other guys that are really letting him down. And it's the defensive game of the team, which is to me, on the sixth defenseman, but also on the forwards for not helping out well enough. This is where the responsibility lies. And we said it also the other day on Saturday's show. Goaltending was bailing this team out. Beginning of the season, playing spectacularly well. Well, that has come back to earth, and the Jets haven't corrected the mistakes that they were making.
Let's head to break. When we come back, I want to talk more about the goaltenders, the defensive pairings, the lines, everything. And we'll preview, of course, tomorrow night's game against the Vancouver Canucks. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290. The horizon tries, but it's just not as kind on the eye. You're listening to TSN 1290. This is NHL This Week. With the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, this segment brought to you by our friends at Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Whether an elite athlete or a weekend warrior, a proper fitting custom-made mouth guard is a must-have piece of protective equipment. Don't be an Ezzy. Give yourself peace of mind protection as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. Contact the Linden Market Dental Center, 204-487-2226, or online at lindenmarketdentalcenter.com. So the Jets went with the revised forward groups last night against the St. Louis Blues. What were your thoughts on the new forward lines that Paul Maurice deployed last night? Do you expect that to be a long-term thing, or do you think that ultimately he's going to go back to what he knows, which is Ladd, Little, and Wheeler?
He might stick with this one. I thought that first line was able to create some opportunities yesterday, and Perreault had that good chance early in the first, and obviously Little scores. I think changing it up... is something that he's going to go with now. It wasn't, I mean, Drew, if the line is producing but the team is not winning, then it doesn't matter if the line is producing. That's what it is to me. So I think he'll continue to mix it up until he finds a combination. I think he might stick with the combination of last night because he likes the game a lot more than he likes the other ones. But I think if they lose another one, he's certainly not. And then they play okay. I don't think he's going to stick with it.
Let's put it this way, Richie. The blender is staying plugged in.
You hear Paul Maurice last night? It was an interesting comment he had after. Maybe we can get the audio up after the game about the power play. Go ahead.
Well, I mean, the power play continues to struggle, right? No goals last night. Mm-hmm. There's been one goal in the last, 24 chances? I forget exactly what it is. But I agree with Richie, Drew. I think the line blender is going to stay intact. And I thought Matthew Perreault was pretty good on that line. And it's unfortunate to see Perreault struggle with only one goal because he was so good in his first year with the Jets last year. But they really got to get him going. He's a key part of their offense, right? Mm-hmm. And I thought Ladd was good with Scheifele and Ehlers. And again, I didn't think that line was excellent, but I didn't think they were bad either. Again, the little Wheeler combo is usually driving the offense, right? So I would expect those to stay the same. And, you know, Chris Thorburn's been up on that third line. I wouldn't expect that to stay the same for too long. I'm not saying that you won't see that against the Vancouver Canucks, but I would expect that you're going to see Nick Batan come back into the lineup. We're not sure if it's going to be tomorrow, but I expect he'll go back in the lineup because you want more offense. And I think especially a game against St. Louis, not saying Peluso didn't play well, because I actually thought Peluso was good. He got an assist.
Yeah.
So I'm not saying that he doesn't.
How much more can they run out Peluso and Thorburn as part of the regular 12, though?
Well, I would expect, again, that Anthony Peluso is probably not going to play tomorrow or at the very least all three games on the homestand.
I almost think that it's like Paul Maurice saying, get me some help here. Like, Chris Thorburn, with due respect, is a fourth-line right winger. We've said it so many times on this show. He is playing not only third line, but third line left wing.
He's playing penalty kill, too.
Remember the two...
He is playing penalty kill.
No, I understand that. But remember the two... It's a replaceable quality, in my opinion, considering what he doesn't bring to the table of other things. So the two-on-one the other day, he comes in with Lowry, and then Trouba chips in the rebound.
Sure.
That pass was not a good pass by Lowry, but the idea is he's playing on his off wing. He's not comfortable there. He's had a hard time angling that puck. So at some point, if Paul Maurice continues to put Chris Thorburn on the left wing third line, I'm almost thinking he's saying upstairs, hey, can you get me somebody here?
Well, you guys know I'm a huge Chris Thorburn fan, and I think he's been playing well lately. And Rich mentioned he got an assist the other night, and he's got a couple of goals on the year. But, yeah, ideally, I think, you know, Paul Maurice would even admit that ideally he'd like Chris Thorburn on the fourth line. And why is he on the third line? Partly to do with the fact that Alexander Burmistrov just hasn't played that well. I think that's part of it, and he's been demoted.
And
right?
He had a good, so I thought, a solid game yesterday. But yes, Ezzy, I agree with you. But the concerning part to me would be the fact that Chris Thorburn has essentially played top 9 minutes for a large part of the first 5 years.
And that goes back to, should the Jets have signed Lee Stempniak? I know we sound like a broken record here, but he's doing pretty well for the Devils right now. Are you relying too much on rookies and players that were not in the NHL last year?
Well, when you say that Chris Thorburn's been playing well, I mean, you know, I guess he has been, he hasn't been. He's playing well for himself.
It's not an indictment of Chris Thorburn's playing ability.
He's
aware of his limitations, and he plays, he's a team player, and he's good in the room, all that stuff. Okay. But then you have to still restrict his minutes to the fourth line. If you're playing him on the third line with Adam Lowry, he's not that offensively gifted. And then Drew Stafford, who has struggled, but plus is with those guys, is going to struggle. You're basically saying with your third line, we're not going to create any offense. And if your second line, which has obviously been struggling and nobody's getting any points, or as it was for a while there, then you're basically saying, Ladd, Little, Wheeler, or bust.
And Rich, I agree with you. I mean, that third line needs to be better. The Jets have been relying too much on Brian Little, Blake Wheeler, Andrew Ladd, Nikolaj Ehlers, and Mark Scheifele have been struggling. They've cooled off. You look at their numbers over the last 6 or 7 games. I don't think Ehlers has scored in the last 10 games, has he?
No, Ehlers has certainly slowed down significantly. I thought Scheifele was okay yesterday, though. He was more noticeable than Ehlers was.
Scheifele's lack of production is more concerning than Ehlers because Scheifele's been in the league a few years now, and he needs to produce more consistently. Ehlers, I'm not concerned about a rookie struggling. But when a rookie is in your top six struggling, there's more pressure upon him to succeed.
Right.
That's the problem, is that you have to, when you have young players in your lineup, you have to be prepared for the ebbs and flows of his production.
Yep.
Okay? Because he's young and he's adjusting. But when he's not producing, if you're prepared for that, you go with it. If you're not prepared for it, then you panic. But the problem is it's like as if they're prepared for his lack of production. Like, in terms of his development,
they're accepting
the,
of
the
it.
The management is almost. I'm just theoretic. I'm thinking out loud here. The management seemed, you know, this is part of the deal. Coaching staff's probably thinking, well, this is part of the deal. Every game I lose, I become less and less of appealing of a coach.
Sure. They're accepting of the fact. They're aware and they acknowledge that a rookie player is going to struggle probably for significant periods of time, not for a game here and a game there necessarily, but he's going to go through stretches of time.
That's what
where
happens. That's what
it happens. It happened to Mark Scheifele in his rookie year. Remember the first, you know, 40 games of his rookie season when everyone said that he would be better off in the AHL? Mm-hmm. And then he, you know, got his legs under him, and he was fine, and he's, you know, an NHL regular, certainly. It's the same things, you know, when we talked about this in the offseason. We said, if they struggle, if there's an injury, I mean...
Which there hasn't been.
There hasn't been an injury. Yeah. Can you imagine what this lineup is if there's an injury on this team? You know, who's playing...
On forward more than defense.
On forward on more than defense, of course. I mean, there's been, you know, I'm talking about forward groups. Who's coming up from the AHL?
I still think, you know, getting back to the way the Jets have played, I still think that the line combinations up front is not the big issue. It's keeping the puck out of your own net.
I still think that
Ladd, Little, Wheeler, those three guys, it's one of the top lines in hockey. Well, it's a bona fide first line at the very least. And mm-hmm. Scheifele and Ehlers were tearing it up in the first 10 or 12 games of the season.
Long-term,
to me, it's more so
fine.
About the way they're playing defensively. And that stuff comes. I mean, nobody was expecting Adam Lowry to score 50 goals this year. He's struggling. And you can't put it all on him. You can't put it all on Chris Thorburn. You can't put it on Stafford, who's only got two goals. He's playing on the third line.
You wonder on that point, Ezzie, if moving Lowry to the wing to allow him to be more physical and take the pressure off goal scoring wise, maybe moving Perreault to the middle, we talked about that on Saturday, it's a possible solution to everybody's problem.
Oh,
I don't know. Possible. But, you know, Ezzie, the other thing to note about Ehlers and Scheifele is that you go on a four-game road trip. Now, they started struggling before, but you go on a four-game road trip, well, there go the easy third-pairing matchups.
Yep. Sure.
They're playing against teams are going to match up more against
them. It's going to be harder to get them open there.
Let's shift our focus to goaltending. Is it time for Paul Maurice to maybe run with one of the two goaltenders as opposed to the back and forth rotation that we've been seeing?
I don't really have a problem with that. I think he's just going with who's going to win and keeping it up. And if you keep winning, you keep playing. Really is what I think he's going to do right now. Just anybody gives him a win. I don't have an issue with the way he's handled the goaltending.
And goaltending is not the main reason why they're losing games. Was the goaltending not very good against Nashville? Yeah, I would say that it wasn't very good. And yesterday, you know, Michael Hutchinson, I don't think is the reason why they lose that game. He lets in three goals. I'd say maybe one of them of the three was weak again. But no, I don't have a problem with Paul Maurice continuing to rotate his goalies. As Richie said, if one of the goalies is playing head and shoulders above the other goalie, then yeah, then you maybe play him four, five, six games in a row. Hey, maybe you leave him in there for 10 games. But right now, they're not winning. So you're going to continue to see that rotation, I think, mm-hmm. until really one of these two goaltenders takes the bull by the horns and starts winning consecutive games. But there's no reason to believe over the last 2 years, Paul Maurice has stayed with this rotation. So unless you count, you know, the time where mm-hmm. Michael Hutchinson, you know, started more games than Pavlik, and then Pavlik became the starter towards the end of the season. But mm-hmm. right now, mm-hmm. I don't think you're going to see any change.
Pavlik tomorrow? Figured just logically.
I would expect Pavlik tomorrow.
I mean, Hutchinson technically started the last two in a row, even though it was a short stint in net against Nashville.
I would certainly expect Pavlik tomorrow. I'd be surprised if it wasn't him.
Yeah, I would agree with you there that I would expect it to be Pavlik. What about the defensive pairings that we saw? Those have been shuffled around. I mean, really, it seems like every game those defensive pairings have been shuffled. Party gets into the lineup.
He probably sticks with the same as last night.
Yeah.
I think it was the same lineup as yesterday.
Including Peluso?
That's the only change.
Patan comes back in?
Yeah, just because of a team that's more skilled than physical.
Probably.
They're not that skilled, but they're more skilled than physical. So, yeah, Drew, I would say that's a fair assessment. It would be Peluso out, Patan in. The Patan yo-yo is something that needs to be addressed as well just because of his development.
We're going to address that in the fourth segment, as it happens, on today's program. So why don't we head to break, and when we come back, we'll bring in Ben Kuzma of the Vancouver Province to talk more about the Canucks ahead of their visit to Winnipeg tomorrow evening. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290. Here we go! 6:30 in the evening, Tuesday evening here. NHL This Week on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel alongside Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. Ben Kuzma, the Vancouver Province, is going to join us momentarily as we get set to talk about tomorrow evening's Jets-Canucks game at MTS Center, a game you can hear live on TSN 1290.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Pleased to welcome back to the program our good friend from the Vancouver province, Ben Kuzma. Ben, good evening, and thanks very much for joining us.
Hey, not a problem. Anytime.
I always appreciate it, Ben. Canucks and the Jets tomorrow evening at MTS Center. Two teams that are struggling right now. The Canucks coming in having lost or winless in their last three games, 3-4-3 in their last 10. You know, they had been, you know, off to a decent start at the beginning of the year. Why the recent struggles for the Canucks?
Yeah, it's funny. They started this seven-game road trip looking fine. I mean, Ryan Miller had a .923 save percentage. The kids were playing great. There seemed to be some symmetry with the lines. And then the problem with these guys is that, you know, they can get games to overtime, but they can't do anything once they're there. They've dropped two in OT on this trip. You know, all but one loss this year, you know, has been by one goal. It's been one of those, you know, is the glass half full or half empty here in Vancouver? I mean, you've made the commitment to the kids, and I think everybody will go along with that. It's not a trend in the league. It's the reality. I mean, Chicago Blackhawks have used 8 rookies this year. I mean, it's the way the game's going. But the problem with the Canucks is the fact that once they get to OT, they don't seem to know what to do. I mean, they're 0-6 in OT this year. That's remarkable that they haven't been able to win an OT game. And I think the problem here is the fact that they usually put out the Sedins with Edler, and everybody thought that, you know, those guys are so good with the puck that they're going to be able to possess it. Well, it's a speed game. Overtime is all about speed, and you better not shoot the puck wide because it's going to come around the boards, and it's going to be an odd man rush, and that's what happened last night in Montreal. So the problems here in Vancouver are probably more the veteran core than the kids, and, you know, Miller hasn't been great on the trip, so they head into Winnipeg tomorrow night looking for something, and I'm sure the Jets are in the same boat. The Canucks have kind of lost their identity of a team that finds ways to get things done, and right now they can't seem to buy a win.
Ben, you mentioned the Sedins, and Daniel Sedin had the goal last night, and you mentioned all the rookies. There's, I believe, 5 rookies in the lineup right now, and Daniel Sedin, I watched the game, and it was pretty impressive. Had the high stick and doesn't end up missing a shift, yeah. and then ends up coming back. I guess, is it time to say that, or I guess people are going to stop saying that he's a soft player now?
Well, both of them. I mean, I've seen Henrik take some pretty wicked shots, too. And the guys, they're tougher players than they're given credit for. And by tough, I mean strong on the puck. I mean, they're not going to run anybody through the wall. But they're pretty good in that respect. I think the problem that Willie Desjardins is having right now is how does he deploy these guys on the power play and in overtime. I mean, they found some symmetry with Yannick Hansen in Columbus, a rare win on the road when that line struck for 11 points. And of course they figured, okay, well, let's go back to the traditional power play and we'll put Hansen with the Twins and we'll have Edler and Weber on the points. And, they've had, three of the last three games they've been able to manage a power play goal, but the penalty kill is gone south. This was the league's second best unit last season, and it plummeted from 6th to 16th in 1 week by giving up shorthanded goals left, right, and center, even getting caught for a penalty on another power play and giving up a penalty shot goal. So specialty teams are going to get you a long way in this league, and right now, if you're not in the top 10, both categories, and the Canucks certainly aren't, you're going to lose a lot of games. And this is what my point that I started out with. They're good enough to get to those close games right now, but they're not good enough to win them.
You know, Ben, speaking of all the rookies, and I think it's actually 4 rookies, not 5, because Bo Horvat's in his second year, but how surprised are you that Jared McCann's come in and now he's tied for the lead in goals?
Yeah, Jared McCann was an interesting guy. I mean, even when they drafted him in 2014, he was one of these guys that thought he was going to go a lot higher in the draft, and he kind of had a chip on his shoulder. Then he had mononucleosis, couldn't make it to his first camp. And then this one, we weren't sure because he was played in that summer showcase for the World Junior camp and got drilled and probably got a concussion out of it that he didn't want to admit, and just came to camp and got better every day. And the thing you notice about McCann, he's very quick. There's something about today's players. They seem to be able to get to open ice in a hurry and do something once they get there. And I don't know whether it's the composite sticks or the fact that they've all been exposed to elite programs. They get the pucks away in a hurry. I was talking to some NHL coaches on this trip, and they said, you know, the one commonality with rookies when they come to the league, it used to be they all had a bad shot. That's the one thing, that they just couldn't, you know, get the puck on the net at an NHL level. Well, now with these composite sticks, and they're used to them, and they know how to bend the shaft, they know where to lean on. McCann's shot is extremely quick, kind of like Mike Bossy-ish with its quick release, and he can shoot in tight. So to answer your question, McCann was a real surprise. The only guy I figured would make the team out of camp was probably Virtanen, just because he's got that, you know, 6'2", 210-pound body that who hurts you. I mean, he doesn't have to run at you. It's like running into a wall. He leans on guys and they just drop. And Virtanen's a lot better skater than I thought he was. So McCann's a great surprise. And the other big one, too, is Ben Hutton, who only played 4 games with Utica last year after playing the University of Maine. Guys, he came into camp, and I'm watching him the first day, and he was putting pucks right on the tape, 40 feet, kind of like a young Chris Tanev, always on the right side of the puck, always making a good decision. And he's been a real pleasant surprise because, as we know, they don't have a lot of depth on the back end. So to have those guys play, they brought Brendan Gaunce up for 1 game. Hunter Shinkaruk played last night. So they've used some rookies. And it's the reality around the league. And the thing here in Vancouver, and I think it's probably a little bit the same story in Winnipeg, is the fact that, you know, you can go a certain distance with your veterans. And the Canucks found out in the playoffs last year that, you know, they got slapped around by Calgary. And it drove this organization crazy. I know with the Jets and Anaheim, it's kind of like, okay, we got this far with the veterans. Sooner or later, you got to flip that switch, and you got to live with the mistakes, and knowing that you're going to be better. I don't know what the situation is in Winnipeg, but here in Vancouver, there's a lot of patience because they know these kids are only going to get better.
More patience in Winnipeg, Ben, when the team hasn't lost 6 games in a row, but in time, I'm sure they will turn it around. We mentioned some of the young players, Ben, and you're talking about the rookies. Bo Horvat, you know, a guy, he has 6 mm-hmm. points in 19 games, and of course, you know, points don't always tell the whole story, and you're covering the team on a regular basis. Mm-hmm. It impressed me last year, can skate. You were talking about the speed of the young players. Mm-hmm. What has his season been like thus far?
It's funny because Bo Horvat talked about the sophomore slump from the first day of training camp, and he's immersed in one with a couple of goals. I think the thing here is that, you know, we all looked at Bo Horvat as a possible second-line center. He just had, you know, progressed that greatly in the second half last year to finish with 13 goals. But of course, you had Brandon Sutter here. You had options with Sutter to put him on with the Twins. And the problem is when you put Bo Horvat in a second-line position, or even where he is now, playing a third-line center and seeing some power play time and PK time, expectations go north. And I think it's really affected him because what's happening in Horvat's game right now, he's not as good defensively as he was last year because, you know, guys, when you're not scoring, I'm not saying he's cheating, but maybe leaving the zone a little bit earlier. He's not that great with his defensive zone faceoff as he was last year. So, but, you know, there's a lot of try there, and I can't tell you how many, you know, nets he's missed where he's had great chances, but that's what happens when you're a sophomore and you've come off a great rookie year and you're pressing and you're trying to, you know, go from 13 to 20 goals. That's quite a leap. But, you know, he's the least of their problems because, you know, the effort's there mostly every night.
You're listening to NHL This Week with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Our guest is Ben Kuzma. Ben covers the Vancouver Canucks for the Vancouver province. Ben, looking at the back end for the Canucks, we know that Kevin Bieksa was traded to Anaheim in the offseason. As currently constructed, is this defense good enough to put the Canucks into the playoffs at the end of the regular season?
It might be. I think, again, Ben Hutton is the most pleasant surprise because I thought that you know, they tried to sneak Frank Corrado through waivers, and he was claimed by Toronto. I always thought that, you know, he's kind of the extra forward here. You know, the way they're constructed right now, I mean, they're getting Lucas Spezza back off an ankle injury. He could play as early as tomorrow night in Winnipeg. And the one thing they're missing with Spezza, it's not so much that, you know, he has this unfortunate inability to move the puck sometimes and put it in bad spots in his own zone. They miss his physical play. And as much as they can move the puck better, I mean, Hutton really helps him in that regard. You know, Tanev's good. Bartkowski is getting his feet under him. So they move the puck much better. You'll notice it tomorrow night. the Canucks exit their zone a lot better than before. I wonder about the grit factor. I wonder about it down low. It's at a certain level in the regular season, but we all know what happens down the stretch and into the playoffs, and that's where the Canucks were beat up last year by Calgary. They couldn't handle the aggressive forecheck, and they couldn't handle guys down low. So that's going to be the challenge here. But, you know, you can erase a lot of problems by getting the puck out real fast, and I think that's going to work to their advantage. But, you know, having said all that, I said from the outset they'll be scratching and clawing, you know, for a wild card spot in this conference. The division, I know it's not great right now, but the standings are a little bit upside down, and some of those guys who aren't there right now will be there in the end. So, defensively, they're okay, but they're not great.
Ben Markstrom was in net last night for that loss, that overtime loss, as you mentioned, to Montreal. And I know he hasn't played too many games this year. Ryan Miller's played most of the games. I guess the two-part question is, do you expect him to start tomorrow night? And how has he been doing now that he's the bona fide backup? He's been given that backup role now that Eddie Lack has been traded.
Yeah. Well, I think the game in Columbus had said a lot because Miller was kind of in a funk. I mean, you know, he went back to Buffalo. You know, the team flew there on a Thursday. They practiced there on a Friday, and they played a Saturday afternoon game. It was the first time Miller had gone back to Buffalo after being traded to St. Louis. He never went back the first time because he thought it was too close. He was injured last year when the Canucks were there. So he kind of got a little discombobulated by the whole thing. I don't know if he handled it great. He didn't handle the Jersey game great. So come Columbus, Markstrom goes in there and makes 42 saves in a game that the Canucks probably had no business winning. It was all him. And like you referenced, he played last night. I imagine you'll see Miller tomorrow. The only thing there is the Canucks have back-to-backs here on Saturday and Sunday. Now, that'll be interesting to me. Willie Desjardins was talking about, you know, Markstrom's game is at a place now where he doesn't worry about back-to-backs and splitting the cage. So if Miller goes tomorrow, it'll be really interesting to see which game Markstrom gets on the weekend. The Blackhawks are here Saturday. And the Devils Sunday. So he's gotten his game to a point now where you'll see a lot more of Markstrom. I think they've overused Miller, and he got kind of worn down on that trip.
You know, the offseason, Ben, was a fairly big move in the contract given out to Brandon Sutter was kind of the talk of Vancouver, and it was a pretty polarizing move. And, you know, you've covered the team for many years, and there seemed to have been a few of those over time.
Yeah.
What have been the early reviews on Brandon Sutter?
So-so. I think Sutter's a better skater than I thought he was. He's pretty good in transition. But, you know, the biggest problem I had with Sutter was term. I mean, 5 years. I mean, he's going to be 32 when that contract expires. I mean, yeah, there are a lot of 32-year-old centers in the league, but in this conference, and especially in this division, I mean, you find out in a hurry how hard it is to play the middle. And I always thought that that's going to be a hard thing for Brandon Sutter out west. He skates well enough to keep pace in this division and this conference, but I wonder how beat up he's going to be. And he's already been out of the lineup because he was rocked a couple times pretty good on this trip. So that was my biggest problem. It wasn't the money because as a 20-plus goal scorer, he was getting market value. But a five-year extension, that's quite a bit for a guy who is, you know, the Canucks never really considered as a second-line center a couple of years ago when there was some thought that they might do a deal with Pittsburgh and move Kessler there at the deadline, and Sutter's name kept coming up. So we'll have to see how he holds up. But, you know, he's got the no trade for a couple of years, and then, of course, the Canucks have the modified no trade and then no trade at all, so, or I should say they can move him, because I think once Brandon Sutter hits 30, it's going to be interesting that the Canucks better have some leverage in terms of perhaps moving him if things aren't working out here.
Final question, Ben. I know, just keeping with those off-season moves, because, you know, we're about a quarter of the way through the season here, and Brandon Prust, of course, you know, had the injury. But in terms of that move, Cassian goes out, and, of course, he faces the issues that he now faces. Was that something that to the Canucks, you know, you never hope ill for anybody, but is that something to the Canucks they think, you know, that's what we were dealing with, and we're happy to finally be past that?
Well, they tried to move Zach Cashin on several occasions. They tried to move him at the deadline last March. They tried to move him in the offseason. They've been trying to move him for the better part of the year. You know, he's had every opportunity here to, you know, be as effective as he could be on the ice and make sure he's the consummate pro off it. And I think he just he ran out of strikes here. I mean, you know, they also gave the Habs a fifth-round draft pick choice just to move him. I mean, Brandon Prust is, I mean, let's be honest. I mean, Brandon Prust here, he's on an expiring contract. You know, he probably will be moved at the deadline. You know, somebody might take him as a rental. I mean, he's here because, quite frankly, they wanted to get rid of Zach Cashin, but they wanted to add some grit in return because Derek Dorsett can't handle the physical load when they match up against some teams here. So they liked having Prust and Dorsett in the lineup. But that was more about getting rid of Zach Cashin than getting Brandon Prust here.
Ben, just wanted to ask you about one more player, a guy who hockey fans here in Winnipeg are familiar with, Yannick Hansen. He actually still works out in the offseason here in Winnipeg. You know, he's playing with the Sedins right now, and he's got 11 points in 19 games. Is it nice to see him? Because I know, nice to see him, I should say, you know, succeed there and get some chance on the first line, because he's been a staple of this Canucks team for, what, 8 years now?
Well, he has been. I mean, the thing about Yannick, he's probably the fastest, if not one of the fastest skaters on the team, and that's always going to hold him in good stead. If he had better finish guys, Yannick could finish off some of those scoring chances, he'd be a 30-goal guy. but the fact that he knows where to go, the nice thing about him, he can play up and down your lineup. He was a fourth-line guy last year. He never bitched, he never moaned, he got his 10 minutes, he got his points, and he got his goals. And he's one of those guys that just shows up and gives you what he has. And the one thing he has is he's smart, and he knows how to play with the Sedins, and he knows where the net is, and he knows to be good, responsible at it in his own end. So he's a guy that you don't worry about playing. And, boy, like I said, if he had a little better finish, he'd have a lot more goals.
Ben Kuzma covers the Vancouver Canucks for the Vancouver Province. He's a frequent guest on this program. Ben, as always, terrific insight into the Canucks, and we always appreciate your time.
Okay, boys, enjoy the game.
Thanks, Ben. Take care. It's Head to Break. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290. Big thanks to Ben Kuzma for joining us on the program. In case you missed any of that, it'll be available for download on iTunes and on tsn1290.ca. This segment of the show brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey. Conveniently located at Cordon and Lanark in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's is a family-owned and operated traditional-style deli. Take it home or eat in their full-service restaurant. Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for nearly 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com. Rich, you went back into the archives of Illegal Curve to when just after Paul Maurice was hired. We were joined by John Forslund of the Carolina Hurricanes play-by-play broadcaster, and you know, to talk about Paul Maurice, because you know, John Forslund obviously would know Paul Maurice as well as anybody else in the NHL, having you know been with the Carolina Hurricanes and with watching Maurice for so many years. Here's the clip of John Forslund talking about Paul Maurice and how Paul Maurice, what his one biggest weakness is as an NHL head coach.
John, is there one thing that you'd say maybe is his biggest weakness, you know, on the other hand?
I think, again, if he can get through the periods, I've always felt that when the walls are coming down and it's a tough circumstance, he internalizes too much. And, you know, that's when, you know, he'll withdraw a little bit. I think sometimes it has somewhat of an effect on a team. When he's had his best success, you know, and this will be a big key with the Jets, in 02, he had terrific goaltending from Artur Zerbe that helped the Hurricanes, you know, get to the finals against Detroit. In 09, I think Cam Ward played better in 09 than he actually did in 06 when he won the Conn Smythe and carried the Hurricanes, single-handedly, in my opinion, carried the Hurricanes through the playoffs until his back gave out in the conference finals against Pittsburgh. And, you know, that was a situation that helped him as a coach. Pavlik's got to get on board, and Pavlik's got to get to another level, or they might have to find another goaltender there down the road. Mm-hmm. But he's going to have that. In Toronto, I'm not sure he had it. It helps every coach, but, you know, he needs to be able to make sure the team, if the team doesn't have that, he has to make sure that they can compete and win without it. And, you know, in his best days, he's had it. In some of the times where he's been challenged, it hasn't been there. And it's just taking that next step. I think as, with more experience and maturity, I think he can take the next step, you know, to get a team to the level where they need to be a, you know, playoff contender and go deep.
Do you get the sense that Paul Maurice is internalizing these losses at this point in this losing streak?
I don't know. I just thought of that interview while watching him doing the pressers and thought, well, hey, John Forslund knows heck of a lot more about it and knows Paul Maurice more than I better than I do. I don't know him at all. And you know, that was his one observation. I thought, you know, the Jets are struggling now. I wonder now if he is internalizing or pushing it too much. He does seem like a guy who puts a lot of pressure on himself. I also thought, Alex also has this clip, I also thought it was interesting the comment Paul Maurice made to the media last night about the power play after the game.
You see quickness on your power play first and foremost. That's where you see that sharpness and that jump. And it's been more this game, but tonight those are our big minute guys in there. They didn't have a whole lot in the tank for me on the power play tonight. We moved around a couple of good chances. I know they scored one off a face-off play on their power play after that. I'm not sure they had better chances than we did, but we're feeling it because we haven't scored on the power play. So you're not 0 for whatever you were tonight. You are, 1 for 22 or whatever you are in the last bunch, and that's too much weight to carry. You got to shake that off and get back to being quick. I mean, we'll move people around. There's not a lot of power play guys sitting on the bench, though.
That was the last part.
That there's not a lot of power play guys sitting on the bench.
I think you guys heard that one. That was interesting. That one caught my ear last night.
This is what he's got.
I'm not saying it's not what he's got. And we talked about the power play on Saturday. And what did I say to you, Drew? And you asked what I'd change. Not much. There's not too much to change.
Yeah.
So I totally agree with the assessment. I'm just surprised he said it.
Well, I mean,
I don't blame the coach for being honest. But I wonder aloud if, again, that's another thing, another message. Hey, can you get me someone here that might help a bit?
If you look at the Jets roster, strictly from the power play sense, I mean, I don't get the impression, like, who could they airlift in that's going to really improve that power play at this point? Unless you're really
Hold on. That depends on what you're looking for, Drew, because sure. If you're looking for a guy, I mean, for example, to me, if you're looking for a guy to help the power play, you're probably looking for a guy who can create space and shoot it a little bit better from the right or left, depending on what you want to do, probably from the right side,
mm-hmm.
although you lack left guys, so maybe left and you move the power play over. But the idea is somebody can shoot a little better.
A trigger man.
Yeah. Now, again, those don't grow on trees. And we'll talk. Bob McKenzie reports the Jets are looking for a top six forward. I'm also reporting every team's looking for a top six forward.
I think that was Bob's point also more. Yeah. In his report, that was his point more than anything, so is every other team in the NHL.
And so is every team looking for a top four defenseman.
Yeah.
But I think that's what the Jets could ask for, be a guy who can kind of make the Jets, as my opinion, make the Jets harder to defend in a way that they have to block shots. The opposing team has to block quick shots. So right now, to me, the only guy the other team is really fearing in terms of a shot in the power play is Byfuglien.
Sure. Well, and this was my point on Saturday's show to this comment where I said, I advocated, they need that trigger man, but your counterpoint was, who are you taking, which of the veteran guys that you've relied on are you taking their power play minutes away from?
Well, we were also talking about internally.
Sure.
That's a different thing than talking about who else could help.
Right, you're right. If it's an external fix, which I don't see happening. I mean, this team has been so conservative to do anything. You think that, games...
I just read into a little bit to Paul Maurice's comments. I kind of think the guy wants a little bit of help, and it doesn't need to be a massive change. I mean, there are guys probably available on teams that aren't that good that you could probably pry away that might be helpful here. Now, could you have signed them in the offseason? That's a whole different ballgame. But, I mean, I think, Ezzy, that Paul Maurice probably wants a little help. And to be honest, before the injuries come, and they're eventually going to come, they always come, you're going to want a little bit of help.
Yeah, and it's to be expected that he's going to sound frustrated and his comments are going to reflect that, because when you've lost six games in a row, he's not going to sugarcoat it and say that everything's going well and we got some good chances, but, maybe we'll get a goal next game. The power play hasn't been good. And, they're better in the faceoff circle, but they need a power play goal. They still need to stop taking so many penalties.
That's a good point, Ezzy.
As far as bringing another player in, at this point, I don't know if a trade is imminent. I think if the Jets continue to struggle for the next 3, 4, 5 games, maybe Chevy makes a move. But for right now, it all comes back to the way they're playing defensively, giving up too many shots, giving up too many goals, not necessarily the game last night against the Blues, but certainly the Nashville game, certainly in Dallas, certainly in Minnesota, even going back to the Montreal game, which was, almost 3 weeks ago now, they're giving up too many chances. So that's really the issue for me. And I still think they have a lot of dangerous players that they can put out on the power play. They're just in a funk. And to me, the power play is not the be-all, end-all. Chicago Blackhawks have won a couple cups with not a very good power play. So the power play is not necessarily a complete reflection of how good your team is offensively.
That's fair.
But I still think you need to be able to rely on that power play for a goal at least every couple of games. I still think, Matthew Perreault, he's struggling. Drew Stafford. He's struggling.
Yep, yep.
They have a lot of players right now. Nikolai Ehlers hasn't scored in 10 games. I mean, they're snake bitten right now. Yep. They're not getting goals. They're getting chances. I think they're going to turn it around, and I hope that it starts tomorrow night.
And on that point, I do agree with you. That's the biggest thing is defending. I'm just trying to read into what Paul Maurice is saying and trying to guess as to what they're looking at here in terms of the rumors now with Bob McKenzie, what's going through their heads. But I agree with Ezzy. It starts with defending. And if you can't do it, you don't have much of a chance. You don't have a very good chance, I'll put it that way, make the playoffs in this conference and especially in this division.
Richie, there have been too many games this year, especially over the last couple of weeks, where they're giving up 4 or 5 goals.
That's right.
It just can't happen. You got to tighten it up. And they know that. They're trying to do it. They just haven't been doing it. It's about, I think, the way they're executing right now. And, again, I still think they're going to turn it around. I still think they're going to be competitive. They're going to be right in the playoff mix until the season ends. But right now, they just need to stop the bleeding.
You're also falling behind a lot. We haven't really touched on that. Well, it's tough when you fall behind all the time.
Down 2-0 yesterday. They come back, and then they give up the lead again. They're just that quickly, as you said off the start of the show. Let's head to break. When we come back, we're going to talk about Nick Pitan and his development this year with the Winnipeg Jets. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290. Second hour of NHL This Week, Tuesday, the 17th of November. This segment brought to you by Keener Jerseys. Keener Jerseys has become known as the world's best jersey customizer. Keener's knowledge of jerseys is unsurpassed. If you want awesome jerseys for your team or have a jersey you want customized, visit Keener Jerseys online at keenerjerseys.com or find them on your next opponent. Saturday, the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, 12 noon here on TSN 1290. We'll get you set for the Jets and the Coyotes later on that evening at MTS Center. As the Jets continue with the second game of their 3-game homestand. Game one goes, of course, tomorrow evening, 6:30 p.m. puck drop, if I'm not mistaken, here on this fine station. The three-headed monster of Bayak, Knighty, and Edmonds will have the call for you on TSN 1290. Gentlemen, I want to talk about Nick Pitan for a couple of moments, if you do not mind. Of course, a healthy scratch last night for the Winnipeg Jets. He's played in 14 games so far for the Jets. He's got one goal. You know, averaging about 9.5 minutes of ice time. Fourth line minutes, playing on a fourth line role with Andrew Kopp and sometimes Chris Thorburn. Generally, you know, I guess maybe on occasion Alex Burmistrov. Hasn't seen him in the lineup, I guess. I guess he played one game in the lineup with Peluso as well when Kopp was out of the lineup. Is it time for the Jets organization to maybe consider sending Nick Pitan down to the AHL? Is his development being helped at all by playing these limited minutes, occasionally being a healthy scratch for the Winnipeg Jets so far this year?
I think Nick Pitan should stay in the NHL right now. And I know it's easy to maybe say that he should be sent down to the AHL because he's only got the one goal and the Jets are struggling and he's not in the lineup. But I still think that they committed to have Nick Pitan in the NHL right now. And I think the issue with him is he's not playing enough and he's not even playing at all sometimes. Mm-hmm. And I think that was the question before the season. It's too early for me now to know if his development would have been better suited in the AHL. He's an excellent player. He's talented. He had back-to-back 100-point season in the WHL. We know that. He was excellent for Team Canada at the World Juniors last year. Right now, he's not in the lineup. And I think, again, it's difficult, Drew, because if the Jets are doing well and he's only got one goal, I think it's harder to make that argument, right? Mm-hmm. And from what I've seen, he's got great vision, he's got great speed, he's got a lot of creativity. So I think he can absolutely stick in the NHL. He's only 20 years old at this point. So I don't think sending him down to the AHL is the right decision because they've committed to him over the last 2 months, starting with training camp ending, him making the team. So I think Nick Pitan should stay in the NHL. Now, do I think that he's not really served staying in the press box? Yes. If you're going to have a young rookie in your lineup, he's got to play, right? He can't be in the press box. He's not developing in the press box, is he? You can't really develop much in the press box. But I'm a big fan of Nick Pitan, and I think that he just hasn't been playing enough. And I quite frankly think he should be getting more opportunities on the third line, especially when you have a guy like Alexander Burmistrov struggling. He's only got 2 goals. So, you know, our friend Peter C. Amandis wrote a really good article for IllegalCurve.com. Maybe we can tweet it out and... You know, the title of the article was did Nick Batan miss an opportunity with the Manitoba Moose? And he points out to Claude Giroux, who played for the Philadelphia Phantoms before he came into the NHL and eventually became one of the top scorers. But I think at this point, right now, he's struggling because he's not getting enough minutes, and there's a lot of pressure on the top two lines, and especially even, you know, another rookie, Nikolai Ehlers, to produce. Nikolai Ehlers is struggling, and that's partly why I believe Paul Maurice took him out of the lineup, because he wants the toughness of an Anthony Peluso, for example, when you're playing against tougher teams. So I think he should stay in the NHL, Drew, and I still think that there's a bright future. But right now, I think he's struggling, and that's part of your development.
Richard, before I let you answer that question, let me give you the following stats. 14 points, 17 games, 1 year, $850,000, Lee Stempniak, New Jersey Devils. Now you can answer the question.
Well, no, I mean, Drew,
I don't think you can use that as a reason why Batan should be in the AHL, though.
No, I think when you're looking at it, we said it in the off season. You know, I thought, at least I don't want to speak for everybody here, I thought the Jets should have brought another veteran forward because of make the young guys work hard, make them work for a spot. The fact that you're going to be facing injuries eventually, the fact that it didn't cost too much, and all those factors. So if that resulted, I don't care if Stempniak was here and had 5 points, but resulted in maybe giving a guy some time to develop or make him work harder, then I think it's a good investment, especially because the Jets have so much cap space. And obviously Stempniak has been great. So sure, would he have been great here? We don't know that. The Batan thing, you know, he's played most of his games, you know, he's played the majority of time with Thorburn and Kopp. And so it's always a tough thing, you know, you put a guy on the fourth line who's used to scoring, doesn't play a lot, used to playing a lot of minutes, and doesn't create a ton, used to playing with really creative players. As we know who he played with, and what, Ty Ratty and Brendan Leipzig, different guys who were able to create a lot of offense in the WHL. Now, I know it's a different game. I have some concerns, Ezzy, about his skating. His hockey sense, I don't. And obviously his size isn't not going to change.
Mm-hmm.
I think that, to Ezzy's point about, you know, if he's not playing, it's tough to really see what he can bring to the table. And if you're going to play him with those guys, is he really useful? I was at the Moose game on Friday, and I thought Joel Armia played a real nice third period in overtime. You know, Morrissey, there's some things to like there, but the team isn't certainly not loaded with offense. So would he be better served playing in a big-time role there? Maybe, but who takes his spot on the Jets, and what do they bring to the table? And it might be that you think a guy like J.C. LaPonne or something plays a fourth-line role better than he does. I can see that. Does it make the difference between the Jets making the playoffs or not? I don't think so. Does it make the difference in terms of Patan's development? I don't know the answer to that. It's possible, you know, playing more. If he's going to be in the press box every game, yeah. If he's going to play 8 to 9 minutes at the top level of the NHL, maybe he still is better served. This is one that I grapple with. I generally like to err on playing the guys more so in like Adam Lowry kind of year in the AHL. I think that's probably the best way to do it. So if I had my druthers, I'd put him down there. But I'm not judging him on his play so far. Put it that way.
Right. And with 14 games, you got to give him more time, right? You got to give him a full season and then maybe say, yeah, okay, he should have been in the AHL.
I'm
and
not
then
saying he's been bad.
Right, and I'm not either. I think he's been okay. Has he struggled? Sure, he's struggled. He's a rookie, and he's
That's
playing
right.
on the fourth line,
That's
and
right.
he's got different responsibilities, as you mentioned, Richie. He's not on the first line, and he's not first power play. So right now, it's a tough situation for him, and it's a tough situation for Paul Maurice because they're trying to get wins. He's struggling, so he's putting in different players into the lineup. So, you know, if Nick Batan's on the Manitoba Moose, do they have a couple more wins? Potentially. But the point is that Nick Batan was given a spot on the team out of training camp, and now I don't think the right move is to send him down to the AHL unless he's really struggling over the next few weeks. Then maybe you send him down. But you got to make that decision. You can't make that decision, I don't believe, later in the season. It's got to be now or never.
Well, I think going to, you know, one of the big things working to his advantage for why he wouldn't be sent down to the Manitoba Moose is there's no real candidate to replace him. I mean, Thomas Raffel has been injured.
He's coming back soon, though.
I know, he's coming back soon, but you don't know. I mean, you know, maybe if Raffel comes back and he he's been out of the lineup for so long, he needs a few games of conditioning in the AHL before you can even consider that. Sure. But, I mean, it just seems like, Nick Batan isn't going to get any bigger, so it's not like you can send him down there, you know, to deal with that side. He's not going to get any taller,
yeah,
right?
Bulkier.
He could get bulkier, but you don't expect him to put on a ton of weight because, you know, that's not his game. So, I mean, you sort of, he is what he is almost as a player to some degree at this point in time, you know, size-wise, skill-wise, you don't know.
Your pace improves with the speed of the game. Like, when you play fast all the time, your pace improves. Fine. In my opinion.
I would agree with that, too. It just seems like if you're not going to...
I think if you, excuse me, Drew, but if you play him with faster players, I think his speed, his pace picks up as well.
Right. I would agree with that as well. I mean, you play, you know, they say you play up to the level of your competition to some degree. It works the same way with your teammates. If your teammates are playing at a fast rate, you try and keep up with them as much as possible. You know, to the best of your ability, of course. It just seems playing on that fourth line role is, I know he's getting some power play time. He's getting a minute 26 power play time per game. It just seems like a bit of a waste, but it's sort of a chicken or an egg argument in that, you know, how do you solve it? I mean, if you give him more time, does he produce? If you don't give him more time, how do you expect him to get better and start producing? You're rocking a hard play situation with a guy like Nick Petan right now, really solely because he earned that job right out of training camp.
That's why I said a couple of weeks ago that I would try him on the third line, which was the third line then. It's kind of the fourth line now. It's a mix of everybody, just to see if he can create some offense with more skilled players to see if maybe that's a better fit for him. Because I just find him to be very difficult for him to create anything, which most people would have a problem with Kopp and with Thorburn.
Well, they're not offensive guys.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, they're not going to be offensive guys. And both are tasked with doing things that they do all right. I just wonder if that's not the best fit. So that's a big thing. You know, I'm certainly not categorizing this because I think he's a talented player, but you look at a lot of guys, skilled players who play in the AHL over the years, and they come up and they're 90-point guys, and there's a lack of whatever, something that they can't do particularly well, but they come on the fourth line, they play 5-6 minutes, they get no points, they get sent back down, they never carve out of it. I'm certainly not saying that, but for him, I understand the same plight, is that you play with guys who don't get a lot of points, you can't really produce, and then you're upstairs. It's tough.
Let's hit the break. When we come back, we'll talk about the contract situations regarding Andrew Ladd, Dustin Byfuglien, and a number of the Winnipeg Jets restricted free agents. You're listening to the NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290. Drew Mundell alongside Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live here on TSN 1290. The segment brought to you by Frank Zappia, Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, the official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com or at 204-772-2100. We're going to save the contract year conversation for Saturday's Illegal Curve Hockey Show, 12 noon on TSN 1290. Craig Button with an interesting article on TSN.ca looking at five ways to improve goal scoring aside from what's been discussed over the last couple of weeks, you know, increasing the size of the nets, shrinking the size of the goalie pads, et cetera, et cetera. So here's Craig Button's five ways to improve goal scoring. Number one. Penalties should be served in their entirety. No longer does the penalty expire when the 2 minute when the goal is scored on the power play.
Yeah, that's how it used to be back in the pre-50s.
Well, he talks about November 5th, 1955, Beliveau scored three goals in 44 seconds versus the Boston Bruins, all on the same power play. It was a rule that was changed because the Montreal Canadiens were so dominant. Yeah. Sort of like the Gretzky rule or the Oilers rules of the 80s where they no longer played 4-on-4 with coincidental minors. When that got changed to keep it 5-on-5 because the Oilers were too dominant at 4-on-4. So let's start with suggestion number one. Penalties should be served in their entirety.
No. My problem with that, Drew, is the amount of penalties that they're calling now, you're basically going to have a 40-minute special teams game. You want to watch that? Because the skill might be all right. The pace is not good. It's not a fast pace that the power play has. So is that what you want the NHL to become? I think that's not something you want.
Yeah, I agree with Rich on this one. By the way, I think these five ways to improve goal scoring from Craig Button are great. I like that he's thinking a little bit outside of the box, and he's not just going along with the narrative.
Here he's thinking inside the box.
Well, I guess he's thinking inside the box.
The penalty box?
Not just should you make the nets bigger and all of that, and the goal equipment. Right. I think we've heard about that ad nauseum over the last, 10 years now. So I agree with Rich. It's too extreme. You can't have all of these penalties just lasting their entirety, even if there's a goal scored. Right now, you see a five-minute major. You know, that type of situation, then that penalty runs its course, right? But minor penalties, you can't have the player serving the entire penalty, especially if there's a goal, which would be the case.
Right. It's kind of akin to, like, similar a little bit to if you, in basketball, you got rid of, you know, having to wait till the penalty and you just shoot two shots every time anybody got fouled. Like, do you want that to become the game?
It certainly increases scoring, but it really does.
Right.
It changes the game.
Pace. It changes the pace.
It's terribly slow. Suggestion number two, ban icing on the power play by shorthanded teams.
Yeah, we've talked about this before. I think we talked about this last show or a couple of weeks ago. And I like this one. And what you're going to see here is if you ban the icing when a team is shorthanded, you're just going to see more chances. More chances, more goals. So to me, that's an obvious one.
Yeah, I don't have an issue with, I mean, I don't love it. I don't mind it, though.
It's better than bigger nets.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Right. It's better than bigger nets because bigger nets bothers me because it fundamentally changes the game. It's been one of those rules where it's been the same from the start.
Yeah.
You know, for the most part. For the modern NHL, it's always been the same size nets.
And you have to deal with all the other levels of playing. I mean, if they're that worried about the goalie's protection, then it's simple. Slim down the equipment and then go back to wood sticks.
Well, the wood sticks would certainly make a difference.
Well, it would in terms of how hard the shots are, and then you don't have to worry about goalie protection as much.
By the way, we should note here that they did this in the United States Hockey League.
Did which? Eliminated the banned icing on power plays?
And what they found was there were more power play goals.
Well, it makes you
so
trapped
it's
on
tried,
the ice.
It's tried and tested.
Yeah. Trapped on the ice, you can't change. You're
tired,
You're tired, everything else. It makes sense, and it doesn't fundamentally change how the game is played. I don't mind
that because it makes you make plays. Right? That's what it does.
Yeah.
You have to make plays. I don't mind that.
The next one, eliminate the tag-up offside rule. Now, there was a brief period of time.
Wasn't that brief, I don't think, Drew.
Really?
It was a while.
5 years?
Was it that long?
That was
10 years?
No. Couldn't have been 10 years, could it?
I feel like it was at least 5.
Oh, yeah.
When did it change back? It changed back after the first lockout?
I believe
Not the first lockout. 2000s. Sorry, the
there's been 13 of them.
Yeah, I know. But the lockout that cost them a year.
Yeah, I think it was right after that. But I don't like this rule. I never liked this rule.
Yeah, I don't
so
either.
Many just I like chasing the puck and make and I don't mind putting it in. Otherwise, people don't remember the way the game was when you dumped it in, it was immediately offside. I don't like that at all.
It just stopped.
Everything
just stopped.
There was no
in the neutral
flow,
zone.
Right? Aren't we working at flow here?
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, I should explain what this currently, if you have the puck in the neutral zone and one of your players is offside, you can dump the puck in and you can't chase after the puck until you clear the zone and sort of reset.
Right.
This rule would immediately call offside if you dump the puck into the zone while one of your players was offside, was ahead of the play.
I was kind of confusing because if you played like in a rec league or something, that wouldn't be the rule. But the NHL was a rule, and you're watching the NHL all the time, and you could still put it in the rec league.
Yeah. I believe it was after the Jets 1.0 left that they introduced this rule, though, wasn't it?
Yeah, it wasn't for a little while, Drew. I just didn't like it. You had guys standing at the blue line all the time, or the middle of the ice all the time, carrying the puck, and it was just waiting. I just didn't like the way
You just pass the puck around waiting for somebody to, you know, if somebody was struggling to get out of the zone or fell down, you're just holding on to the puck awkwardly.
I didn't like it.
No, it killed flow, which is what you mentioned. This one's very interesting, and it comes from Scotty Bowman. It's add another line. So Scotty Bowman's suggestion is to introduce a line that goes across the top of the face-off circles.
Like the ringette line.
Yeah, the ringette line. So it's much like the ringette line. So teams would have to gain that line before the red line is eliminated for purposes of an offside pass. So if you're trying to make a stretch play from your own zone to the opposition's blue line, you have to at least get above the ringette line before the two line pass is eliminated.
They don't have the two line pass anymore.
Well, this is what Scotty Bowman's saying is that it would be a two line pass if you didn't get you would reintroduce the two line pass in this instance if you made that pass before you got to the end to the ringette line.
Trying to create turnovers before the ringette line is really what he's trying to do.
Pretty much. From the goal line to the ringette line in the defensive zone, you almost have to carry it up if you want to make a big, long stretch pass as your first pass. I like it to some degree in that it creates more opportunity for turnovers. I don't like it because I think it really will eliminate the stretch pass from the game, won't it?
Is the stretch pass a good thing? I mean, I don't... The problem with the stretch pass is it ends up in tip-ins and chasing the puck, which is not necessarily playmaking. At the same time, if you know having a guy that far up the ice also backs up the defenders and creates more space in the neutral zone. And so for every action, there's a counter reaction. So, I mean, it's tough. Mm-hmm. I'd have to watch this to determine whether or not it's helpful. I like creating such a thing that doesn't really transform the fundamentals of the game. And we grew up playing with two-line passes, so it wouldn't be the biggest change. And lots of these players, well, probably some of them are really young and probably haven't, but many of them still have. And I don't mind it. I don't know how much it transforms scoring, though.
Well, I think the logic would be, well, it would create more defensive zone turnovers, which will lead to more scoring. Ezzy, let me ask you this. This isn't sort of related to these ones, but if you're adding all these new rules, aren't you making the game is pretty fast as is, and it's a pretty difficult game to officiate. Aren't you asking a lot of the officials to start implementing these new rules that currently they're having a lot of trouble with to begin with?
Right, and they're already having trouble, especially with the video review and all that, right? So I think you would have a little bit more pressure on the referees now. Mm-hmm. They're going to have to watch this so-called Scotty Bowman line or Ringette line, whatever you want to say. I'm kind of like Richie here. I can see what this would accomplish. As you said, you might have some more turnovers, and you're going to have a little bit more of a quicker exit by the defensemen or the forwards in their own zone trying to get the puck up because they know they have to cross that line to make the outlet pass, right? Mm-hmm. So I can see what they're doing there, but you are, again, changing kind of the fundamentals of hockey a little bit. A lot of these rules, I think, would be tough to bring into the NHL next year, for example. So I can see what Craig Button's trying to accomplish here, and I know some of these have already been brought up before. As we mentioned, the USHL has already eliminated the opportunity to ice the puck when you're penalty killed. They don't have that. It was just an experiment. But I think what you're trying to see here is Craig Button is trying to think of different ways aside from making the net smaller or reducing the goal equipment. Mm-hmm. But I personally believe, and this goes back to what we said. I know we got to get one more in here, Drew.
Sure, you got time.
But I still think it's the way the game is coached. And Rich has talked about this for years now.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, if you keep coaching a certain way, and I don't really believe that there's that much wrong with hockey right now. I mean, you still have high-scoring games. I think this is somewhat created by the NHL itself. I mean, scoring is down right now. It's down a little bit. But I still think it's a great game. I think it's an exciting game. I think you have a lot of competitive teams. You don't really have any teams that are out of the playoff picture right now. There's a lot of parity.
Well,
and sure, I personally liked watching a 1-0 or 2-1 game. Well, you guys know I'm a Devils fan. So back in the late 90s, early 2000s, I could appreciate that. There's a skill to playing that defensive style. We saw that in the 2014 Olympics with Canada winning low-scoring games. So I think this idea that there needs to be all of these new changes to increase goal scoring because we're somehow in a crisis and there aren't enough goals. I think, to me, the NHL is fabricating themselves.
They're sucking and blowing. They want to expand and take all the money, put in their pockets, but they want to complain about how that, or they want to make the game faster, more skilled, and increase goal scoring. Well, you can't do both.
You definitely can't do both. And that's ultimately what it boils down to.
You can try, but you're probably going to fail.
Like, Nashville scored 7 goals twice in the last 2 weeks.
Sure.
And they're not known as an offensive juggernaut.
That's true.
So I don't know.
And I know they don't have the most skilled offensive team, but their coach is known for coaching in an offensive style, though.
Yeah. And I think, but looking at it at a macro level across the board, the stats indicate goal scoring is down. But I don't think that means that the quality of play is down. This is just my personal opinion. I think the NHL is in a great state right now.
I think
you have a lot of competitive teams. You have arguably, you know, some of the most exciting young players in the league right now with Connor McDavid, even though he's injured, and Jack Eichel and Nikolaj Ehlers, and we could go on and on and on. Jared McCann in Vancouver. I just don't know that there's as big of a problem as some people think.
You know, I think that the quality of play is down from our youth, from the 80s and everything. But that's a function.
Is it the quality of play or the excitement level?
Well, I think
Richie makes a good point because I think hockey players have never been better. They've never been bigger. Goalies have never been bigger, as we know.
Yeah.
Hockey players have never been as skilled and fast.
Right.
I think it's a function of those 150 players in the NHL that aren't really NHL caliber players. They are nowadays NHL caliber players.
See, I also think, as far as the regular season goes, Drew, I don't think you can't expect every single game to be a thriller.
Well, the season's too long.
There's 82 games, and I would say, you know, if you're looking at the entire NHL, 90% of the games are exciting, and 10% of the games are not that exciting. Once you get into the playoffs, nobody's complaining.
Because you get rid of all the dregs. You get rid of the dregs teams. You get rid of the dregs.
That's the playoffs in every sport.
Yeah, that's the playoffs in every sport.
You watch NFL this year?
Yeah.
It's pretty terrible.
It's pretty terrible. You're right. Look, every professional sport, the season, maybe with the exception of the NFL, but probably to the NFL as well, the seasons are just too damn long.
Oh, yeah.
There's no reason for the NHL season to be 82 games. There's no reason for
Yeah, well, that's not changing.
That's a whole damn Drew, that's
I know,
that's
a separate issue.
We're talking about rules here.
I know, okay. The last rule that Craig Button suggests, and it's something you've talked about before on the show, find a way to curb shot blocking.
Yeah,
so Craig's suggestion is, his rule tweak is, if a player goes down on one leg or leaves his feet to block a shot, it's a minor penalty.
Yeah, that's what I'd say. That's what I'd said on the show. It's Bob Gainey's idea from years ago.
Sure.
There's only that one and the icing on the penalty kill that I think are worth talking about at length. I mean, the Scotty Bowman one, I have time for it too. Make it three. That one is the third, though. These are the first two. Because I don't really see, and I know there's a skill in shot blocking, I don't really see any value it brings to the fan. Oh, what a great shot block. How many guys go home and say, oh, what a great shot block?
Nobody.
So that one, and then the icing on the penalty kill, I would go shot blocking. I don't know, actually. I like the icing on the penalty kill one, too. Those are the two I think about. But I think these are the ones you have to examine. I mean, 3-on-3 is great for overtime, but it's not a reality of any game that actually matters in terms of the playoffs. So let's focus on these kind of things and see if that helps the game.
Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll discuss the Pittsburgh Penguins, a team in crisis. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290. My colleagues on NHL This Week, Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg, disagree with my assessment of the Pittsburgh Penguins as a team in crisis.
The Penguins have won 7 of their last 10 games.
Well, allow me to read the quotes to you then.
I still think Mike, I said on the air before, I don't have to give somebody to be let go. I still think Mike Johnson gets fired this year.
Here's Sidney Crosby on Saturday night after they lost 4-0 to the New Jersey Devils. He can't live with games like Saturday night. This one, Crosby said, that game was a matter of effort. We didn't compete, Crosby said, exasperated, searching for words. We didn't deserve to win. His teammate, Evgeny Malkin, shared Crosby's sentiments. We're not playing right, Malkin said. We're not working hard. I know it's tough right now. We're mad at each other. We need to stop, look in the mirror, and start working. We're not working. That's courtesy Jonathan Bombouli of the Pittsburgh Tribune Review.
From October 24th to November 6th, they won 6 games in a row, and then they've, out of those losses that we're talking about, a couple of those are one-goal losses to Columbus and Montreal in a shoot. Columbus was a one-goal game, and they beat Montreal in the shootout. Drew, they're not scoring enough goals. And to Richie's point, Mike Johnston, first off, we don't know why he was hired. I think we know why he wasn't hired. They wanted Willie Desjardins.
And nobody would take the job.
And
how bizarre is that? Nobody would take a job coaching Malkin and Crosby.
Well, I mean, who's your boss? Well,
he definitely doesn't have them going in the right direction.
No.
I don't think they're playing the right style that they need to be right now. I don't think they have the defense to play the type of style.
It's weird, Ezzy, because if you watch them play, you talk about the defense, and I agree with you in terms of their defense, but if you watch them play, I mean, they've allowed the fourth least goals against all year.
They've allowed the fourth least goals in the entire NHL with 37 goals against, and they've scored the fourth least goals in
right.
the NHL That's with 36 goals.
That's your point.
When you have Evgeny Malkin, Sidney Crosby, and you brought in Phil Kessel to play on that top line, and you have other players that can
possible?
Put the puck in the net. Patrick Hornqvist can score. David Perron can score. Nick Bonino is an offensive player. He's got 3 goals in 17 games. They need to open it up. They're not scoring enough, and you know, I don't know if Mike Johnson loses his job. I'm not sure about that. But if they don't turn it around, not just as far as the record is, but the way they're playing. Because right now they're, what, 7th in the East, 5th in the Metropolitan. So they're in a playoff spot mm-hmm. right now. But there are warning signs there. You got to get
agree.
Your big boys going. Yeah. Sidney Crosby's got 2 goals.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
You know, that's to me, that's just mind-boggling.
We both, you know, you guys both say that you expect Mike Johnston will lose his job during the course of the season.
If it keeps up. Yeah.
I don't see it. No. I mean, I see him losing his job.
Who are they replacing him with at this point in time? If there was anybody that was that viable out there, aren't they already? Isn't that guy already their head coach?
Randy Carlisle would love that job.
He used to be in Pittsburgh back in the day. I can see sure. that.
That's well, got him from Pittsburgh.
I think a lot of coaches would love that job.
It's just
the veteran coach who's not sure if he's going to get another chance would be champing at the bit for that job, I think. That is his point. I mean, I think Carlisle would be a good fit there. I think Randy Carlisle is a good coach. I know people.
So you think it's a system problem in Pittsburgh?
No. I mean,
if it's not a system problem, then why are you firing Mike Johnston? What's the problem there that's letting the Pittsburgh Penguins with Crosby and Malkin and Kessel
whatever
not
system
score
you
goals?
Put in Sidney Crosby and he still has such minimal output? I don't think it's simply a system problem. I think that's more of a motivational problem.
Well, if Sidney Crosby, who eats, drinks, breathes hockey, you know, if he's got a motivational problem, isn't it an organizational-wide problem than it is more than a coach problem?
I don't know if it's a system problem, a motivation problem. He's got 2 goals in 17 games. That's the problem.
That's the problem. I agree. The fact that Sidney Crosby has 2 goals in 17 games
I think it's system and motivational problem.
Don't you go to Sidney Crosby? I know that Lemieux and Burkle want to sell the team. But they have to have some relationship with the guy. Don't you go to him and say, who do you want to be the next head coach of this team?
Well, you do it with the GM then, Drew.
Well, the GM is done after this year anyways, isn't he?
Well, he's been making a bunch of moves.
I know. I
didn't mind their offseason. I mean, they didn't address the defense, which is an issue.
Well, they thought their biggest problem on defense, which
Fair and Bonino weren't bad moves.
No. I mean, their biggest complaint on defense is Derek Pouliot, who they thought was going to be one of their top 4 defensemen, can't make the team and is regressing in Wilkes-Barre.
I mean, I haven't seen him play, so I don't know about Derek
Pouliot.
By all
accounts.
But I know that they need defensemen. Having said that, when you have such an offense, as you mentioned, all the guys who can score, and when you have the 4th Leafs goals in the National Hockey League, I mean, just look at the teams that are around them. I can't even believe the stat based on their pure skill.
And
the only teams that have scored, less than them, Carolina, Anaheim, which won't last very long, and Philadelphia, who's made a concerted effort, now in Voracek struggle and all that, but concerted effort to try and change their way because their defense is terrible. I realize there's some similarities there, but Pittsburgh's offense is the teams around them. I mean, it's not in the same league. Carolina, have you seen the lineup? Philly's roster, I mean, it's not great.
Yeah, it's top heavy with Giroux and Voracek. Yeah. This Pittsburgh Penguins team, I think, has had troubles going back to last year into the playoffs. They got bounced out of the first round of the playoffs. They're not a hard team to play against.
That's
and,
true.
And that's the biggest problem that I have with the Pittsburgh Penguins. I mean, we can sit here all day and talk about what the problem is or if it's motivation or system and all that. But the point is, this is not a difficult team to play against.
That's a good
when
point.
When you've got Evgeny Malkin, Sidney Crosby, Kessel, all these guys, you know, Bo Bennett's a talented player.
You're wasting his prime.
Exactly. And this isn't a team. We all picked the Penguins to make the playoffs, and I do think they are going to make the playoffs because the Eastern Conference just isn't very good.
Yeah, that's right.
It's not as good as the Western Conference. Mm-hmm. So they're going to make the playoffs. But you think these guys just want to make the playoffs and get bounced out in the first round again? I mean, the New York Rangers, Tampa Bay Lightning, Montreal Canadiens, New York Islanders, Washington Capitals, those are better teams.
Yes, I agree with that.
Right? They're more complete teams. So I think, you know, right now, you got to wonder, is there something else going on? And what I mean by that is Crosby's the best player in the world still. Whether you want to say he's the best or Ovechkin's the best,
Sagan's the best player in the world right now.
Well, right.
I'm sorry,
if he's not the best, he's 3 or 4.
Of course, he's
definitely not any worse than 3 or 4,
yes.
Right? So the point is he's one of the best players in the world, and one of the best players in the world should not have 2 goals in 17 games. And is there a nagging injury there? I don't know. But you expect Sidney Crosby to be Sidney Crosby. And for that matter, you expect Evgeny Malkin to be Evgeny Malkin.
Absolutely.
He's not the same dominant player that he was 3 or 4 years ago either. So it's not just Crosby.
Well,
it's not just Malkin.
There's no purpose there.
Kessel's not tearing it up by any stretch of the imagination. He's got 6 goals.
Phil Kessel's always going to be a passenger. Phil Kessel is going to... I mean, when they acquired him, they knew that Phil Kessel was going to be a passenger on this team.
Well, passenger scores 40 goals is a pretty darn good passenger.
I'm not exactly. So, but to expect anything more when Crosby and Malkin aren't going, to expect Kessel to pick up the slack is not realistic. It's just not in him as a player.
No, this team, Drew, lives and dies by Crosby and Malkin. Those are that's your two centers up the middle.
I think if you're Burkle and Lemieux, you pick up the phone and you call in Sidney Crosby and to a lesser extent Evgeny Malkin, and you say to them, "Who do you want to run this organization?" And I know the inmates are never supposed to run the asylum, but these aren't your regular inmates. These are the world's best inmates. What is the downside of having Crosby and Malkin, or having Crosby pick the GM and the coach of this team? Aside from the fact that maybe they're puppets. So be it. You know? What's the downside there? Burkle, obviously the current leadership team hasn't been able to choose the right coach and hasn't been able to choose the right general manager.
I mean, just as a fan of the game of hockey, if you watch Pittsburgh play, it's difficult to watch. And I say that because we talk about their lack of output. Malkin and Crosby have 6 goals in a combined 34 games. For me, as a hockey fan,
isn't that crazy?
I can't like comprehend that that's what the output. That means something is wrong there, and we shouldn't be watching these guys through the maybe you could argue after the prime or the end of their primes, not be dominant featured players in this league, based on merit, and we know that they both have it in them. But it's just difficult to watch. There has to be, as this is what the NHL should be worried about, getting guys like this back to where they should be.
Exactly.
Not having organizations run like that.
Rich, if these guys were where they should be, then
the goal scoring would be up.
That's where goals per game goes up if they have 5 or 6 goals more each.
Well, you know,
NHL should forget about expansion and figure out what's going on in Pittsburgh so they can get their best two of the best 5 players in the league going again.
David Stern when David Stern was NBA commissioner, when he was in his prime, he would never have let this happen. He would never let the best players in his league struggle.
I'm surprised.
The commissioner can't score goals.
No, he can't. But you can. There's things you do, and this actually leads in well to the next segment.
The league does it all the time, still, Drew. That's why I'm surprised it's happened like this.
Right. The league manages to step in and make sure that their best players are in their best positions to succeed. On that note, let's go to break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about the league and the commissioner, who makes $9.6 million per year. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290. One final segment Tuesday evening here on NHL This Week. It's brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com.
Shout out to Alex for playing this song by Pink Floyd.
Yes, thank
you. Apropos.
Yes, this week at Rumors, Dave Hempstead is in town for 1 week only. Shows are already sold out, so be sure to get your tickets real quick at rumorscomedyclub.com.
It's sold out, though.
Not all the shows, some of the shows. Oh. You still have if you go quick enough, you'll be able to buy your tickets. But
gotcha.
If you dilly-dally, and you've been known to both dilly and dally, tickets will be sold out. Gary Bettman earned $9.6 million during the league's 2013-14 season, an increase of about $800,000, this according to the league's most recently released annual tax filing.
A lot of matzo balls for Gary.
It's a lot of matzo balls at $9.6 million. Is he worth $9.6 million? Do you have a problem with the CEO of a multi-billion dollar corporation like the NHL earning $9.6 million?
I got to tell you, Drew, I've been critical of Gary Bettman and a lot of what he's done, and I know he is in a position where he's going to be criticized quite often, and there's some things I like that he's done and a lot of things that I don't. But to your point, if you're running a massive corporation, I don't have a huge issue with him making money of the top players in the league. I don't have an issue. I know lots of people do. I don't have an issue with it.
I don't really either. I'd love to be making 9.6 or whatever you said, $1 million per year as well.
We pay you actually $9.60 each week to show up to the show.
And I'm happy for every cent,
yes,
Drew.
Yeah.
But as Richie said, I mean, what would you, if you weren't happy with that, what would you be happy with? Like $5 million, $4 million, $7 million? I don't know. I mean, the NHL brings in what, $2.5 billion in revenues, $3 billion, whatever it is.
I don't know.
So I mean, you're the CEO essentially of the commissioner. It's a little bit different, but essentially,
it's the
analogy works, right? Like he's the CEO of a multi-billion-dollar corporation, and CEOs of multi-billion-dollar corporation, they make that much money, right? So I
probably make a lot more than that, to
right?
Be honest.
And you know. Especially, you know, Manitoba, we have a lot of poverty. It's tough. I can understand why people say this is astronomical. Huh. But, I mean, he has a job where his responsibilities and what he's responsible for, I guess same thing, I mean, allows him to make that money. And the owners pay him that, right? If the owners had a problem with that, they'd probably find someone else to do the job.
The NHL will crack the $4 billion mark in terms of the total revenue in 2014-15.
Yeah, there you go.
So, I mean, you're paying him, you know, obviously.
One of the things about commissioners is Roger Goodell makes his league money, right? They say, well, I mean, my argument to that is, well, any commissioner is likely going to make his team his league money because who knew that live TV rights were going to be what they are now? I mean, some people did, probably not many, and the commissioners didn't necessarily foresee that. So, I mean, certain part of this is just it was going to grow anyways. And certainly with Goodell and such, and Bettman's been a far better commissioner than him. We know that. But I don't necessarily attribute all of the success and the financial success to him, but I mean, he has played a part in it. I mean, he's botched TV deals and such. And I even think the issue, the TV deal in Canada has kind of left the observer, the fan, with less competition and therefore a lesser product. But if you're talking about coffers of the owners, and that's what they all care about, then he's made them a fair amount of money on that deal, and he's made him money, or going to make him more money with expansion and with relocation fees and things like that. So they're going to pay somebody to pay to do that job for $10 million.
Yeah, I mean, it's exactly it. It's just sort of the price of, you know, and with Gary Bettman.
Didn't Goodell make like $50 million?
Yeah, Goodell was closer to $50 million. And I mean, Goodell's standing there because he's getting.
How much does his league make?
Well, his league makes more than the NHL, obviously. Yeah, yeah. And certainly he stands there and he's in the firing line for really the reprehensible product, you know, morally, that the NFL puts out there on a regular basis. The NHL isn't nearly that bad. You know, Goodell sits there and takes the slings and arrows for all the ownership there, you know, employing people like...
$12 billion in the NFL, so three times as much.
So he makes, you know, five times as much, but, you know, he's got a harder job. Yeah. I mean, commissioner of the NHL is a fairly under-the-radar position.
He's doing a far worse job. Yeah. I think Bettman's done a good job.
Truth is,
compared to him.
Yeah, the NFL commissioner really has to do is stand there and get yelled at by everybody so that the players themselves don't get yelled at. Pardon me. So that the owners themselves don't get yelled at. So Jerry Jones doesn't take any slings and arrows for, you know, employing Greg Hardy and the entire concussion situation and domestic violence situation that they have in the NFL.
And I think as a corollary to that, I think if you look at what Bettman makes, $10 million, and what the average player in the NHL makes, which is nearing $3 million U.S. per year, yeah, these guys get paid a lot of money. But as long as you're paying $200 for a ticket, and as long as you're paying $150 for a jersey, and as long as there's a $5 billion TV deal, these players are going to continue to make this amount of money. And the NFL is even more astronomical. They make even more money, and they make more money in baseball. What's David Price going to get on the free agent market? $20 million per year?
25, 30 a year.
You don't have players in the NHL making $20 million per year. I mean, these guys have reached the pinnacle of their sport, and Gary Bettman has reached the pinnacle of sports business, right? If you're the commissioner of one of the leagues, you've reached the pinnacle. You can't really get any higher than that, right?
Nope.
So, I mean, if you reach that level, and I agree. I mean, Gary Bettman, he is partly responsible for bringing hockey back to Winnipeg, right? So, I mean, I think you got to give him credit for that as well. So, and if he brings in $500 million as an expansion fee, his salary's probably going to go up, isn't it?
Well, I'm sure, cap, you know, bonuses and such, because that's not shareable, I believe, right?
So that's right. The revenue from expansion is not shareable. So, I mean, it's a good business to be Gary Bettman.
And the cap was the biggest thing that he did for the owners.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He won that from the union. Once he won that from the union, the owners had cost certainty. And there's a reason. I mean, you know, you can tell me that the Florida Panthers and the Arizona Coyotes and the Carolina Hurricanes are losing money, and I don't believe you.
I think the more interesting question, Drew, is
that, Drew.
How much longer is Gary Bettman
going to
be commissioner?
Why are these people buying the franchises?
And who's going to be the next commissioner? I think that's a more interesting question.
It's fair enough. I mean, I don't think Bettman's going anywhere anytime soon.
I think Bill Daly takes over when Bettman retires.
I would assume
that's
so.
That's the natural.
I think
natural.
The better question is who takes over for Donald Fear?
Well, I mean, the PA was such a disaster before he came in.
They went
through,
what, four directors in the span of about an hour?
I'm assuming that'll be Donald Fear, handpicked guy.
Sure. That's the much more interesting one because, I mean, the owners, you know, when there's another lockout, because there's going to be another lockout in, what is it, 2020? Is that when it is? 2022?
Hopefully not.
There will be. They'll get another couple percentage points off of whatever the hockey-related revenue is, because there's really no... They're arguing about nothing at this point in time. What are they arguing about? These owners and players.
Well, you say nothing, but it's millions of dollars every percentage point.
Of course it's millions of dollars, but it's just a matter of, you know, you're splitting up a pie worth hundreds of millions of dollars. It's, you know...
And I think those teams, to your question before, Drew, about losing money, I think the floor for those teams is higher than you might think. I think in a free market, those teams wouldn't spend as much money as they're spending now.
I would agree with that. I think
that's why they're losing money, in my opinion.
I don't buy that they're losing money. They might be losing money on paper, but these guys...
And I mean, I think the franchise values offset much of that when they're eventually sold and how much they recoup there, and maybe it's the losses annually that they're able to make up. Like Ottawa, for example, if Eugene Melnyk is losing money annually, the value of his franchise is increasing annually, maybe offsets that, and they have other businesses, and there's that. But it's obviously complex.
Mm-hmm.
But I think annually a lot of these teams are actually losing money.
Maybe the team themselves are, but they have so many ancillary forms of revenue at the end of the day make it profitable to own franchises. These guys are smart businessmen. I don't believe that for the most part it's just a vanity project that they're willing to lose, millions of dollars per year.
The cost certainty was to be able to make the product more appealing to the fan because every team has a chance, right? That's why they have the no 3-point game.
Sure.
I mean, in reality, if it was the big 6-7 market spending all the money, believe me, they could be spending $30 million more than they are now, and they'd still be making a ton of money.
But it goes to show you, if you look at baseball, which doesn't have a salary cap and has a luxury tax instead.
I've said to you when the last lockout, I said I'm a proponent of a luxury tax.
Sure, because it shows you personally. In baseball, a lot of these small market teams, Kansas City Royals, won the World Series, they finished, and they lost in the World Series last year. So it shows you that the salary cap is not the be-all and end-all. The Yankees haven't been a World Series team in how many years, and they always spend, $400 billion, and the Dodgers are the same thing. So it just goes to show you at some point in time, salaries and spending the most amount of money does not equal a winner.
The biggest mistake they made was lowering, in terms of the franchises, was in exchange for the cap, which is what they were happy about. And then we can get really deep into this, but was lowering UFA years, Ezzy, from 31 way down to 7 years accrued or 27. That was a massive gain for the players.
Sure. Well, then that's what they had to do in terms of giving up the right for the salary cap. That's it for this Tuesday. That's right. It's Tuesday here on NHL This Week. That's it for this Tuesday edition of NHL This Week. Big thanks to Ben Kuzma, the Vancouver Province, for joining us. In case you missed any of the show, it's available for download on iTunes, on tsn1290.ca, and on our website, illegalcurve.com. Big thanks to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, Zappia Group Realty, the Jewish Foundation of Manitoba, and Keener Jerseys. You can follow us on Twitter at illegalcurve. Facebook.com/IllegalCurve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com. For producer Alex and producer Chris, for Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. Until Saturday at 12 noon, we wish you good night and good luck, and thanks for listening to NHL This Week.